All right, welcome everybody to our latest Between the Races podcast on the MX Vice Network. Thank you everyone for listening and supporting the site. We really appreciate it. We'd obviously like to thank our sponsor for this one in Fly Racing. Fly Racing is aimed to provide customers with the very best in off-road performance products, led by the revolutionary Formula S smart helmet. Fly Racing continues to push innovation in safety to new levels. Never before has style and technology blended together so seamlessly as the 2024 Fly Racing lineup. For more info, check out flyracing.com or your local Western Powersports dealer. Follow at Fly Racing on social media and cheer for all the Fly Racing riders in the Super Motocross World Championship. Obviously, firstly, welcome Adam Sterry. How's life? And thanks for joining us, mate.
Yeah, good. Nice to be back on with you guys. And hopefully it's not the last one.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Well said. And obviously, welcome Brad Wheeler as well, MX Vice Tester. How are you, mate?
Yeah, all good, thanks. I mean, it's been better for sure. But luckily, managed to get all my stuff for the year sorted beforehand. So worst case scenario, I got this year sorted. But yeah, I mean, actually, the guys at Pod, which is an Australian company, which I didn't actually know, just sent out some K8 braces to test. So, I mean, hopefully we can still carry on with the testing and things like that, which I'm happy to just do like on my own time and put on the website. I mean, the website, I think, is still going to keep sort of taking over. I mean, I'm happy to do it on my own, so I'll keep it going if I have to, one man and that. But yeah, like Adam said, hopefully things sort of settle down and we can get back to full steam ahead.
Yeah, well said, mate. Certainly tough times ahead. And, you know, with the state of the motocross industry, I guess MX Vice, the situation's kind of a victim of that. So we'll just keep it going for now. And yeah, if everyone wants to support, obviously you can check out James's post. But yeah, we'll just keep charging for now. It's not going to completely shut down overnight just yet. So yeah, we'll keep trying to bring you the content as best we can. And yeah, thanks all the fans for the support. All the messages have been really great. All the riders as well. Thank you very much to them. Same as you, Adam. So yeah, we'll just keep everyone updated as it comes. I'm sure there'll be more news to follow, but yeah, it's a bit of a dire situation. So yeah, thanks for joining us on this one, lads. And I guess we'll start with the MXGP chat. We'll start with you, Adam. Obviously you weren't there, but you obviously know a lot of riders that were there and you know that track. It's pretty sketchy, isn't it, mate? A lot of bad accidents, injuries, which is really sad to see. You know, the likes of Gyargo and Brent Van Donick, who's obviously, thoughts to him, who's still in a pretty bad situation over there in a hospital, still needs that operation. So doesn't sound good for him. So hopefully he's getting the care that he needs and he can get home ASAP, because yeah, it's horrible when you go to those countries and some of the healthcare's not at the level that they're probably used to at all. So yeah, heaps of guys going down. But yeah, just your thoughts on the weekend. You know, Adam, start with the track. Anything you want to particularly mention, and how was it from your angle? And then you can follow on, Brad.
I mean, yeah, I've rode Argentina a good few times, and yeah, obviously it's not ideal to see so many people injured already at the first round. But Argentina's a strange one. I think everyone can see how fast of a track it is. I think it's the highest speed track by a long way on the GP calendar. But the difficult thing that people don't really get from the TV, I think, is the type of ground it is. It's very volcanic. It's like, yeah, volcanic ground, so small stones, and it looks prime on the TV, even like when I was watching it this year. But you have like tree roots coming through, dark holes that you can't see from the shadows because the dirt is that dark, dark black color. And yeah, and the volcanic feeling of it makes it very slippy. So when you have all them factors together, and all you need to do is make a small crash at them speeds, and yeah, that can be the season finish. So yeah, like you said, shame to see so many people injured. And touching on like the Brent situation, I think it would be nice for MXGP, I think, to consider some things in the future. Like the areas that we do races, that's maybe more safe for the riders if something bad was to happen. Because yeah, for sure, what's happening with him now should not happen. You know, everything should be taken care of to make sure that we have the best treatment if we get injured. Like the same in Indonesia, if something happens there, it's maybe even worse than what Brent's dealing with now. So I think for the future, that would be something nice to. If they could take into consideration a bit more of the health and safety of the riders and the hotels that they stay in the area. Like sometimes in Indonesia, you go to the area and there's only two hotels on the island, and yeah, you need to cuddle with a cockroach for the night. So that's also not ideal. Like when everyone's getting ill, you know. But yeah, in the future, that would be nice if they could consider a little bit the riders' well-being in these races.
Yeah, I think, I mean, just looking on the TV, it looked like there was a pretty decent turnout in terms of crowd. Like the whole sort of section under the trees looked pretty packed and along down the side. So obviously draws in a relatively decent crowd, which is like nice to see. Sometimes you go to these flyaways and you're like just looking like some bloke's just wandered in there because he's lost, got lost trying to find his donkey. But like in this case, it actually looks like it draws in a decent crowd. So, and like just the visuals, the track, like in the trees, and like the dirt is obviously a cool color. It looks like a really cool track, but like for people watching that are like real into the sport and know how the ins and outs and stuff, like you can see how sketchy it is. Like there was a little clip of Prado just going down a straight after the finish line, and like the back end just kicks out somewhat fierce, and like this dude's like the best in the world on factory suspension. Like if that was Joe Bloggs' adult sea rider at Corsham, he would have just cartwheeled into pit lane. So you kind of
Yeah,
see how sketchy the track is.
yeah, and like on the TV, you couldn't really see them bumps. I know exactly the clip he was on about. It's one of them strange tracks. I mean, there's always a good crowd there. I think in South America, motorsport is popular, and so that's never the question. It's just the track. Also, it would be really safe if the speed was lower. So I think if they slowed the track down a little bit with some more tighter corners or not adding these mounds, I don't think that like the after the start, then mounds on the right, I think that potentially hinders the situation, like makes it more sketchy. I think if they made the corners maybe or like change the corners in a few places where it was a bit more tight and slow, I think that would be the better resolution than anything else. But yeah, like I said before, it's really difficult to see what you're riding on, and it's easy to get caught out. Like the crash from Kuna, that was, yeah, a prime example of that. He just lands, and probably for him, it just looked like loads of grip in the corner, but maybe there's a tree root or some small stones or something. And yeah, at that speed, the front washing away and ended up going down.
You pick it up, Brad.
I mean the track is just overly fast in my opinion. The whole like first turn and around that corner, and about the little wave things, and then those like that the big mound and the big stepper, and then like a tape, another fat type tabletop, like random sweeper. It just looks like such a fast track, and I think especially for like a first round where people are still like a little rusty, a bit kind of race shy, I just think it's not a great start. You need to be so like on your game to race a track like that. I mean, you just saw the amount of people just crashing and going out injured before the weekend even really got going. So it's a difficult one. And yeah, like Adam said, like the soil's so dark, it's hard to see the bumps, hard to see the ruts. Yeah, it just looks like a nasty track to race on. And yeah, I definitely agree. It needs slowing down, some tighter turns. And yeah, just there's obviously a place there in Argentina for MXGP, as we've seen with the crowd. But yeah, the track just needs a few little tweaks here and there just to slow it down a little bit. Just we want to get all the riders through round one,
Like I know more people got injured from the MXGP class, but I think that's not really like I think as the racing went, the racing in MX2 was much more interesting because in MXGP you've seen a lot of the guys riding a bit on their limit and they know it's the first round, like a bit smarter, a bit more experienced. And in MX2 it was a lot more people going for it to specifically for the win, like it was the last round. And I think there you see the difference of, yeah, really experienced riders and young riders in MX2.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the racing was actually really enjoyable, obviously, watching from TV. And I guess we've got to talk about Jorge Prado. Obviously got the fastest lap time in both motos and was really impressive. And I guess some people were maybe thinking he wouldn't be, you know, the motivation levels might not be there. How does he approach the season after that Supercross effort? And, you know, he definitely appears like he's locked in for next year to go to the Supercross. So, yeah, really excellent performance. And I guess what were your sort of takeaways from watching Prado? Obviously, the skill, the technique, when he gets those starts, he's so good. And there's, you know, a lot to sort of like about his riding and how he navigates the tracks in a pretty intelligent manner, but he's also so fast, which is just so impressive how he blends that. And obviously leading 18 laps in the first one was so impressive. And then guys are put on the masterclass in the second one there. So some pretty cool stats from our man Paul Piercy that produces these. Obviously, like we said, Prado in Moto1, fastest lap time, and then Fevre and Renault. And there's a cool one for the Brits out there. Most consistent lap times, least difference between fastest and slowest. Haugmo, Ben Watson up there, and Jeremy Sewer. So they just holding their pace and probably riding quite smart too. And then in the second, Prado again, Geyser and Fevre. So some pretty cool numbers there. Your thoughts on just the racing in Prado and Geyser and anything you'd like to mention, Adam, and then you, Brad, can go on.
I mean, yeah, Prado with the starts again. I think that was the key for him to win the GP, as it is every time. And then he can ride his own lines, his own race, doesn't have to take any roost, or he can just do his own thing. You know, that's what he's so good for, and that's why he's two times MX2 champion and also MXGP champion. So, yeah, he was impressive considering he did Supercross in the winter, and I think Geyser's on it as well. I think Fevre maybe had more in the tank, just was being a bit smart. I think Sewer and Vlaanderen and stuff like that will get better as the races go on. And yeah, we'll see. We'll see how I fare up in Spain, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I've got to hold my hands up. I couldn't have been more wrong about Prado. Like, he come out like all guns firing. I said he was just gonna sort of ride this thing into 2025. I mean, credit where it's due. He was hauling. I mean, just that first race was like just a masterclass. Just out in front, hitting his marks, just slowly pulling away. Just they have nothing for him. And yeah, in the second race, is like pretty much did what he needed to do. Didn't need There was just no need to try and push to try and catch Tim. Tim had an awful first race, so yeah. I mean, he looked real good, looked really strong, looked aggressive. I think doing those Supercross races really helped sort of get his intensity levels up, not just like obviously for the first round of the year compared to everyone else who's not been doing it. But just in general, he looks stronger on the bike, looks more aggressive. And yeah, I think it's they're gonna the riders like Romain and Tim are gonna be in for a bit of a shock if they thought Prado was just gonna lie over this yeah, lie down. They're just gonna lie down this year. So yeah, I mean the top like 10 is pretty stacked for the, like the amount of riders in there. Like Seaworth is in sixth, and Herlins is eighth. This and a guy fair play to Paul Jonas with a second, a third, and a fourth. I don't think anyone would have had him pegged to be like a podium threat in MXGP. Certainly at the start of the year, I know he's always gone really well at Argentina, but still, it's racing the MXGP boys is different gravy. So yeah, I think we're gonna see some real good racing this year. I think Tim Geyser was just generally a lot better than what I thought he was gonna be. I know he made quite a few mistakes at the start of the first race, just see a little tip over as I think maybe sort of first race of the year, just a bit anxious, pushing it a little bit too much and just asking a little bit much of the bike. But yeah, obviously turned it around in race two, and then Fevre was just sort of typical Fevre, solid in the front. Just sort of, yeah, always the bridesmaid, never the bride type sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, Herlin's, he goes well in Spain. He's always sort of gone well in Spain. So I think you're going to sort of see him rebound up towards the podium. And then obviously the round after that is it Rio Lisarda, the third round? So deep sand, you've got to. Yeah, like if he's gonna win the title this year, he's got to start winning. It's it that round, like that's kind of set up for him to win. So I think podium next week. Yeah, next week, and then yeah, I think he's got to get on the top of the box in Riola if he's gonna if he wants to make a bid for this title, because it can you get a few 8th places in a row, it can quickly get away from you.
Yeah, it's obviously not ideal, but you know, like Adam and you guys were saying, just getting through that race on a really sketchy track is kind of the aim. And I guess it's pretty impressive effort in the grand scheme of things. I guess his first GP since Germany. So, you know, just considered consistent sort of weekend of just getting through it is kind of what he wanted, and just a measured approach. And I guess there's still 57 gate drops, like he said, to come after that one. So 8th and 7th isn't too bad in the grand scheme of things. And like you said, Brad, returning to Spain, we obviously had that record-breaking feat, secured that last year. So your thoughts on hurlings, Adam, and just how you're looking forward to that Spanish GP, which will be your first one of the year. Should be an exciting one, and all the Brit fans should make the trip over to follow you, shouldn't they, mate?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think everyone can see that Jeffrey was playing smart in Argentina and not pushing the limits. That just shows really how much sketchy the track was, and because the week before I was at Lerac watching, and yeah, that's rougher than any GP track of the year, and sketchier. And yeah, he went all out and in the last moto and passed Thiago, so. That goes to show how sketchy or how uncomfortable he felt in Argentina. But yeah, he's smart. I think he's going to be there for the title if he stays healthy. And yeah, Spain. On paper, not typically my favorite track by all means. Like rutty jumps, not on paper my type of track, but it's a nice track and my favorite GP, so I'm excited to go there.
That Spanish track looks like a just like a steroided version of Milton Malzor. If anyone listening to this has ever ridden there, I know Adam's ridden there a few times. It's just like
It's just been
man-made, not a lot really going on in terms of elevation, just jump after jump, and yeah, like they sort of rip it. Get
I
ruts,
reckon you've
they
never
go rock solid, and then yeah, just
it's
like
just
yeah,
missing
Milton Malzer
the
on steroids.
it's just missing the white posts nailed 6 foot into the floor. We're just missing them. But
Yeah,
it is a bit of a cop out, yeah. I mean, it's a nice track. Like, if you could go training there, it would be really nice. It's just, and I guess maybe a lot of riders also like the track if you like them conditions. But for me, them conditions are not my preferred surface. My the complete opposites from like Czech is my preferred conditions, and then a track like Lommel. So, either one of
Yeah,
them, I'm nothing.
I'm all for hard pack. Like, give it to me, blue groove and rock hard all day. But it's the way they sort of rip the track so deep, and then you get the big long ruts, and then they're just baked by the sun. Like, that's when I'm out. Like, I don't want any part of that. I'd rather you just sort of fluff the top up, and we'll just let this polish up big time and leave the tires be blue by the end of the race. But at least you can sort of go out wide and cut in, and like you can actually change your line. Whereas it seems like when they rip it up on those sort of tracks, you're just locked into a rut for like 4 or 5 corners. Like, there's just nothing you can
And
do about
normally
it.
that's
Like, you
one or two
can't,
fast lines.
yeah, like you can't square anyone up. You can't like really dive down the inside. It's as long as you get in that rut, it's you're pretty safe, unless you just dog shit. Like, you can just sort of poodle your way around the corner, give it a blitz to the next corner, and so on and so forth. And it really is that easy. So, but yeah, I mean, obviously you've got to be able to go at a decent pace. But yeah, I just think if the tracks I feel like the tracks, you've got to cater to what the ground is like. And if the ground is naturally hard and it's going to be sunny and hot, like, don't rip it up like 4 foot deep so the ruts are just rock hard and dangerous. Leave it so you can move around the track. Like, let's use the whole track. The track's like 10 foot wide or whatever, but it like on those sort of tracks, you end up using about 3 foot of it all weekend. It's just, yeah, it just seems a bit of a waste.
Yeah, so Adam, more looking forward to Riola then.
Yeah, that's more my type of going. But yeah, like you said, it would be nice, but it's difficult with the track prep, I think, especially if it's like warm on a track like Spain. I mean, for the racing, maybe it's better if it's harder, but it's harder to water it, and then it's even more dangerous when you put water on. So that's a bit of a difficult one
They
with the
start
track
doing
prep.
those EMX classes. What do you think that has the impacts on track prep as well? Because that's always a constant discussion. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the EMX don't make the best of lines, and then it kind of ruins the track for us guys, you know. I think that's why it'd be cool if they did like EMX just on Saturday and did some other format and did MXGP and MX2 on Sunday, and then you can make the changes to the track what you want, make it safer for us, spend more time with the fans. And sometimes they water the track deep, and then it's muddy for the EMX, and then it kind of ruins the lines get put into the track for EMX riders, and it's a little bit, especially in Spain, like Brad said, you know, when the ruts get there and they start getting hard, then yeah, you can't, unless they rip it again, you can't change the line that's there. So
Do you
I think
think
that's
the
something they could.
yeah, sorry. You said like the EMX, obviously they ride the track differently, like generally just sort of come into the turns a lot tighter and just generally race the track in a much tighter way than like rather than sort of sweeping it in and carrying the speed. Do you think it's down to the way that that EMX class is raced? Like you leave the door open slightly, and even though the guy is like 2 seconds up the road, he's just going to try and dive bomb down the inside because, like, they're young, full of spunk, and their racecraft isn't really up to scratch. And they're just like, there's a gap. I'm just going to fly through it and we'll just see what happens. But, like, obviously, if they just like down the post, hug the inside, you just don't give anyone that opportunity. Do you think that's got something to do with why the tracks end up being so tight when the EMX are racing?
A little bit, yeah, but I think it's more just like say on a 125, they go a lot closer to the inside of the corner than we can at our speed on a 450. So I think it's just like the speed difference, the difference in age of like being a younger rider and not really understanding the way to open the track up and the racecraft, if you wish. I think that's a little bit to do with it. And for example, like the big triple in Spain. Yeah, we will make the line so we set up for tripling the jump, you know, but when the EMX go out on the 125, they're not going to triple it. So they've got the line's going to get created for not tripling the jump. So it's a mixture of everything, and sometimes it just takes the flow, or sometimes it'll be difficult when we first go on the track. And then like for example, when you go to lean over in a rut, then your foot pegs catch so much because they don't lean over as much as we want, you know. And then that's another thing that people don't see on the TV, you know.
Yeah, it's really cool insight there for sure, mate. And I guess who would be your favourites heading into that GP? Obviously, some of the guys you look at, Renault obviously had a good sort of decent Argentina. He's obviously still struggling with that injury, which actually happened in Spain initially. So he's always kind of good in those conditions. A lot of the French guys are good at it. You know, guys is pretty good at everything, really. Prado will be wanting to put on a show in front of that home crowd. Jeremy Sea was really fast. I believe he was sick there last year. But there's so many talented riders. Obviously, Herling's won it. So I guess start with you, Adam. Who would be your favourites on a track like that heading in? Obviously, Ruben Fernandez will want to be doing well in front of that home fans as well. So, have you got a particular favourite heading in aside from yourself?
I was going to say, where's my picker? I got to pick someone that I'm racing, and I don't know. Is Ruben's leg all right? I didn't hear anything on that.
Yeah, I've just only heard that there's no like serious damage, but it's just sort of a banged up kind of thing. So I guess he'd probably doing all he can to be out there for that GP.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't bet against Prado for his home GP. Also, gonna take the whole shot, I guess. He will be difficult to beat, but I don't know. I think you've got the first few guys, but then it goes down to who was actually really risking it in Argentina, you know. Who was willing to take that risk? Was some people riding at 70% or 80%, or were they riding at 100%? Or yeah, that you don't know. So I think after Spain and after Riola, then you'll have more of an insight on who's going to be the top riders that are going to be fighting for the podium every weekend, and who is really a title contender, you know. But hopefully after Spain, no more injuries, and the field can stay healthy and make the racing good all year.
Yeah, Prado, if you've got to pick Prado, like home GP, red plate, number one, reigning champ, like I think he'd just go 1-1-1. You'll just be so locked in. You'll just, yeah, whole shot and just lead from the front like he does. I just don't think anyone's really going to have much for him. I mean, guys is on that new Honda, and it does look a lot more planted and settled than the older one. So I think that will play to the strengths of that bike on this track if it is as deep and rutty as it usually is. So I think he'll probably finish second, and then like Herlin's third maybe. But yeah, I think Prado is just going to run away with it. He just looks so good this year, and like obviously he gets good starts and puts himself in those positions. So it's hard to just be in a championship fight with someone who's just in that top three around the first turn like every time. Like just to compete with that, you've got to be someone seriously special. So yeah, I think Prado is gonna run away with it. But are we gonna see like Gilbert back for Gilbert and Geraint's back for Spain? Are they joining us? Or are they
I
both
think I
out
think Gil
for
I think Gilbert will be, but I don't think Gerts is, unless there's some really special cream in Belgium to make your bones heal.
It should be a good race anyway. And just obviously, we don't have heaps of time on this one, but just some MX2 chats from Argentina. Obviously, that Moto1, it was really cool to see Rossi, doing so well and showing what a talent he is, like we discussed on the last podcast. Obviously, he got the fastest lap time in that first moto. Obviously, he had that spill at the end, which cost him. And then obviously, Langenfelder, De Wolf, and Beneston were the top three in that one. And yeah, Langenfelder was looking pretty good for the win. And then obviously, race two, it didn't quite work out for him. And Kai De Wolf, Harrop was really impressive on the triumph, which sort of vindicated his decision to join that program. And just the program in general to get off the ground, because it's a really good result. And obviously, Swole was doing well in the Supercross on the weekend. So Koenen was a sort of always a bundle of speed, isn't he? Always don't know what you're going to get with him, but he's an immense rider. Just needs to maybe just clean up those mistakes and just that overzealousness. And he was on, we saw it last year getting GP wins. He's an absolute weapon. So he had the fastest lap time in that second moto ahead of Langenfelder and Harrop. And I guess lads, just yeah, Kai De Wolf, what a great GP win. Maybe on another day he wouldn't have got that one, but you take it when it comes to you, and he's a really great rider. Another one of those guys we've said it's in the title hunt. So start with you, Adam. What were your sort of key things from MX2, and then on to you, Brad.
Yeah, I mean, I think MX2 for me was more interesting to watch on the weekend. A lot of people really going for it. Some riders that I didn't expect to be so good, like I thought they would be good, but not that good, like Marc-Antoine Rossi. And yeah, there's a lot of close racing, so I think it's a lot harder from that class to see who's going to be. I think there's a lot more riders that are fighting for podium spots than, say, in MXGP. I think it's more. Where you have six riders in MXGP and in MX2, I think there's a lot of riders that can go on the podium. So that was interesting, and I think for the rest of the year, it's gonna be interesting racing. And yeah, Kai had a good GP. He was really good in Lierop also the weekend before. Yeah, he looked really strong, and I think at the moment he's just really confident. And yeah, he got a little bit lucky with the last lap fall from Koenen. I don't know how that happened. But yeah, that normally d doesn't happen. That's very rare that that happens. But I don't know how much the injury to his form or after the race I seen him, he was like lying on the floor. So I'm not sure if that had anything to do with it or the lap rider. But yeah, that was unlucky for him because yeah, I think he was really strong and it's a bit gutting that he wasn't able to finish the last two corners. So I think them two were really impressive. I think Langfelder was where I expected to be. The Triumph looked good. I thought it was going to be really good by with the amount of time they spent developing it and behind the scenes, knowing how much effort they've put in there and who they've hired. And yeah, the people they've got on that team are obviously really successful people in the GPs before. So I kind of thought that bike would do really good. And obviously, Harrop's a good rider. So that didn't really surprise me. And yeah, overall, I thought it was good, interesting to watch, good battling, and yeah, always a little bit exciting in MX2 because you never know who's going to make the mistake or what can happen.
Yeah, I think yeah, the MX2 is definitely the more interesting class. Just like the racing just seemed to be a lot closer the whole way through. And yeah, some real surprises. I think yeah, Marc-Antoine Rossi were phenomenal in that first race. I think I was impressed he managed to hold on to it for that long. I mean, the pace that they were running was so high, and for a kid just fresh out of EMX 250 to be leading the MX2 like that was seriously impressive on a track that's just like so sketchy and wide open. Yeah, I think that was a really impressive ride. And the guy on the factory Honda, what's his name? Zanchi? He's like, I've never even heard of him before, really. And yeah, to put it top six. I mean, yeah, don't get me wrong, he's on a factory Honda, but it's not like they put like, I don't know, some established rider on it. It's I mean, I don't think he's established really, is he? He's not like been a top five guy previously.
He's like the fast AMX 250 rider. He was Rossi's teammate last year at the KTM.
Oh, okay, so yeah,
He
like another,
got top
yeah.
10 in that French MX2 race when he stepped up last year. So he's super fast. And he was actually really good in pre-season too on that HRC bike. So he's a really good talent. But yeah,
Yeah.
he's not well known, like you were saying.
Yeah. So still like but like a fresh rookie to the class as well. So and then yeah, I mean like the Triumph, like I think that's unbelievable what they've managed to do. Like if you think when was the last time we saw a new bike come into like an actual genuinely new bike, not like a Husky or a GasGas, but like I guess it would be back in the Aprilia days, back in 2010. And the thing was just an absolute pile. Like it wouldn't turn. Like you could literally only go in a straight line. And Triumph managed to make this 250, and the thing fucking rips. And by all from the people I spoke to that went on the test that I was meant to go on, said it's like the best handling 250 bike they've ever ridden. And like in stock trim, it's by far the best 250. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's the price should it should reflect that. The price does reflect that. It is very expensive. But yeah, I mean, just look at what they've managed to do. They've put a bike on the podium in MX2 where like I mean Mikko Harris is fast, don't get me wrong, but he's not like it's not like they've put Kai de Wolf on this Triumph for like an established podium guy. Like this is Mikko Harris probably had what less than less I don't know for sure, but I'm pretty confident in saying less than 10 podiums in MX2. And to like put it up on the podium at the first round and like wasn't like he just got the whole shot and filtered back. He was like in the race like right to the end. So that was impressive. And Camden McLellan as well, like another guy who has not really been an established top 10 guy, is now like having solid rides in the top 10. So not only is the Triumph not like stunted the growth of these riders, it's actually propelled them forward, which I think is incredible, for like a whole brand new bike. Like this isn't like they've just taken a Yamaha like and put like their own plastics on it, or like KTM did with GasGas and Husky. This is like a whole brand new platform. So yeah, I think it's been quite understated how impressive that is. Well, especially in my mind anyway. I don't know what everyone else thinks, but it blew my mind. But yeah. That went on a bit, but
I
is
agree. I think it is impressive because that is obviously very, yeah, very difficult to make a new manufacturer and bring it into motocross and then go on the podium like that, you know. But I think guess why I didn't or expected it is because yeah, look at the people they have involved and how from behind the scenes know how long they've been developing it and what team and riders they've got. Then it's kind of yeah, it's unbelievable. But to me, it was not expected, not this year early on in the season, but I thought, yeah, with Harrop and for sure they can fight for the podium, you know. But yeah, like you said, very impressive, and that's what happens when you put all the effort in and hire the right people, I guess.
Yeah, and also start with you, Adam. What was your take on Adamo's performance? Obviously, not what he wanted to be, the reigning champ, eighth and fifth for fifth overall. So, just I guess showed some decent flashes of speed, and obviously he knows there's more room for improvement with himself and the bike. But yeah, I guess that's not where he wanted to be to sort of start that campaign of defending the title. So, just your take on it. Obviously, we saw last year the consistency was key for him and just getting through the whole season, not getting injured. And he was like, when I've done a couple of podcasts with him, he was very open in saying, I basically do what he had to do each week, and if he wasn't feeling comfortable, he didn't mind getting past. He was okay with that sort of thing, which is pretty impressive for such a young rider to have that mindset, because obviously you want to pass back and flex your muscles and show you're the man. And he waited for the weekends when he was feeling it to do that, I guess, like you see Tomac these days. So just your take on him, lads.
Yeah, I think that's not the bad result from the first round. Like we said, I think in MX2 it's possible that he wins this weekend. The Wolf maybe goes 5-8. That can be possible. So it's hard to tell after the first round. I don't think he was that happy with it, but yeah, he knows again, goes down to how much risk he was willing to take. He is the champion. He won it by being consistent, and you need to be there every weekend. So pretty sure if you're in the top five every weekend, you're there for the title. So maybe he's going for that tactic again, and it worked last year. So why it wouldn't work? Why would it not work this year again?
Yeah, I think, yeah, obviously he led like the qualifying race, I believe, and then like got passed by the two Husky guys. But yeah, I mean, how much weight do you put on the first round on a track that's just biting people left, right, and center? I think to come away with a fifth overall, yeah, I mean, like you said, there's fucking how many races left? Like 57,000. So, yeah, I don't think he's going to be stressing too much. Just like, yeah, get out of there in one piece and then like move forward from there. Yeah, obviously Italian, big hard pack fan, I'd imagine. So we'll do well at Spain. And yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he snatches a moto win in Spain and ends up on the box. I think Lagenfeld are the same. I think they'll probably split wins. And then maybe Benison. I'd like to see like DeWolf take that sort of next step. Like he's obviously always been really good in sand and has the occasional like really good ride on the harder tracks, but it just doesn't seem to be a consistent thing with him in the past. So like hopefully that he would have taken that step forward this year, and he's just going to be constantly in that top three, whether it's sand or like wins the sand rounds and then like damage limitation on the hard pack round, but rather than it being like a sixth or a seventh, it's a third or a fourth. Because I think he's probably he's probably Adamo's biggest threat, I'd have thought, going for the title. But I probably wouldn't have even pegged Adamo as a favourite. I mean, what after watching Lucas Koenen, I think it's pretty clear he's the fastest guy. But like Adam said earlier, like that crash on the last lap with two corners to go is just, you just don't do that. Like, especially at that level, like how many races has this kid won, like coming up through the ranks and what have you? And yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was a result of his thumb injury, but it's not even like the guys are right up his ass. Like he had like a good 5 or 6 second lead. He just needed to coast round, but it looked like they were like coming around that in the inside of the split section, then cutting across to go inside. It looked like he just sort of maybe, it looked like he almost like clipped like a big rock and it's just kind of just spat him. But yeah, if it's me and I've got a lead like that, I'm just fucking on the peg, just sticking to like the side that
Well,
I'm on, like, you know, to go
maybe that's
inside,
what he crashed.
outside. What,
Maybe
you know, just what, cruising?
he did switch off like and cruised in, and
Yeah.
sometimes that's if you're leading or something
Worst thing you can
and
do.
you yeah and you switch off and then mistakes happen. Maybe that happened. I don't know. Or maybe he hit a root
Yeah.
or a stone, like I say with the track.
Yeah. But it's
It is
like
a
there was
lot more.
no,
So.
like he crashed and then just sort of like led there. There was just like no urgency to get up. Like fucking hell, it's like two corners to go. Like they haven't actually gone past you yet. Like if I'm him, I'm picking the bike up and just like twisting the throttle and trying to get back on the thing whilst it's third gear wide open down the straight.
Just
Like
cut
this
across the track
is,
straight and finish
yeah,
him.
like, well,
Close it
yeah,
out.
like worst case scenario, you get docked. Best case scenario, they let you have the win. It's yeah, I mean, but don't get me wrong, it was like a gutsy ride to like to be two corners from the win after DNF in the first one, because you simply can't hold on. So yeah, I think you've got to give the lad credit. He's clearly in shape and clearly ripping. So it's going to be one of them. Like, he's going to be fast all year. It's just how he needs to obviously limit those mistakes, like we've seen like with Sexton in the past, like just rips, but just having those crashes, if he can limit those crashes to like not every race, then they're going to struggle to beat him, I think. I don't think they've got the speed to just take it to him. So yeah, be interesting for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And any sort of final thoughts from either class, lads? Obviously, Watson, solid effort for that first one. Get that under his belt. He'll be happy to get out of there. Obviously, one of your mates, Adam. And I was pretty interested to see his teammate, Evo Monticelli, engaging in some of those antics with hurlings again. I think Jeffrey wasn't too happy with that, the cross jump. I don't know if he meant it or not, or what was going on there, but he sort of put his hand up, I think. So, interesting little battle, that one. Obviously, sad to see Gilbert not have the weekend he wanted, crashing out and couldn't sort of line up. And then Bobby Bruce actually showed some pretty good flashes. So, it was good for the UK contingent to have a couple of guys flexing their muscles there. So, any final thoughts there, lads?
Yeah, nice to see obviously the British riders back, and I join them again next weekend. So nice to see more British riders back in the GPs. And yeah, I've speaking to Ben, I know again firsthand how sketchy the track was. And he crashed on that corner where everybody crashed, on that top tight right around the tree. That seemed to be catching everyone out. There's like a hole there with some roots, and when you come over, obviously it's blind and the shadow there from the tree, and it's off camber. And yeah, that's a difficult corner, and obviously the track's falling away from you. So when you start to make a mistake, you can't just put your leg down and save it like you would in a normal corner. But yeah, I think Ben was not really happy with his result because the riding he felt was better. But yeah, the mistake in the moto and him coming through the pack, I
Was it the
think
first
his
one? He was
riding.
really holding pace with Hurlings there, wasn't he? I was looking at the times. He was just behind him and he was sort of really not letting him go at all. It was impressive.
Yeah, then the second moto he tried to pass Glenn Coldenhoff, and then that's when he crashed. And I think got back to 11th or something. But for his riding, I think speaking to him, he was happy with it. And yeah, the result, not so much, but I guess you can't complain at the first GP for 11th, I think it was overall. And yeah, I think that's a solid start to the season.
Yeah, obviously it's good to see British guys back in GPs. It was a bit quiet there for a little while, so that's always good. And obviously you've got Jack Chambers and stuff as well from America. So yeah, I mean that was good. Well, yeah, just in general, I think in terms of British riders at British GP, British riders at GPs, it's looking quite like fruitful. So, which is nice, because British motocross over here at a higher level should fucking mess. So yeah, it's nice to see that some of the guys have managed to escape that and are managing to do a bit. So yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm cheering for the Brits wherever they are. So anyone who's able to yeah, go over and live the dream, fair play to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said, mate. And just as we wrap this one up, lads, any sort of final thoughts a week ahead? Obviously, Adam, what's your prep looking like for that MXGP? How are you feeling, mate? Obviously, you've had a good week of training. You had some nice weather today, which is always good there, mate. So, and then obviously, Brad, you can follow on what you got happening with the testing. Hopefully, you obviously got some stuff coming up with Renan, which Sewer's gear looked really sick. So, there's some cool things happening for both of you guys. So, start with you, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, my preparation's going good. I mean, it's difficult to ride them conditions here in Belgium. I can't remember the last time I went around a rut, actually. Even in Spain, there was no ruts. So definitely need to get to the Lelystad or something this week before Spain. I've got Dutch Masters actually on Sunday, the first round of the series for that. Series that I normally do all the rounds of, but I think only one round I'm going to do this year. So that's good, but obviously that's in sand. I've been riding a bit of hard pack the last couple of weeks, just as a little bit in preparation for Spain. And yeah, get horses out of the way this weekend on Sunday, and yeah, get some couple of solid days before flying to Spain next week on the ruts. So, like I said, not my type of track in Spain, but my first GP, and I'm excited to get back into the GP series and yeah, start to build from the first GP, and then we'll see where we're at after Spain and see what we need to work on, and just come away from Spain with two gate drops, two solid starts, nothing crazy, and we'll see where we're at.
Yeah, so I'm racing at the Martin Marshfield on Sunday, so just up the road, which is nice. So hopefully I can get a good bit of testing done on that as well. So that's the plan, and then the Nora Pro Championship kicks off at Oakhanger the following week, and then it's probably one of the biggest meetings of the year, the Hutt Cup, on Good Friday. Seeing memory of Mark Hucklebridge, that's on Good Friday up at Marshfield. So there's quite a few big names turning out for that. So that's always a good meeting as well. And then, my first round of the Bridgestone Championship kicks off 2 weeks after that at Oakhanger. So yeah, we're full steam ahead over here. And looking forward to getting some racing done. I mean, I've figured out I've not actually raced since the middle of September. So it's clutch fingers getting a little twitchy now, so we're ready to go.
Oh, good, mate. Yeah, definitely wish you both all the best for the weekend ahead. And obviously, I'd like to thank the fans and for everyone for supporting the site and the sponsors in Fly Racing, Fox, Scott, AS3 Performance, KTM UK, Kawasaki UK, Whole Shot Motorhomes, and even Strokes for all their incredible support. As without them, none of this would be possible. All right, lads, thanks again. Jumping on, take time of your day to join us on this one. It's been a great chat.
Cheers,
Cheers,
boys.
boys.